this is Ted Brewer, Ted Brewer Show, with my co-host Austin Brewer, who's not quite with us just yet. And my guest today is John Rappaport. I've told you guys for the past week he's coming on, and we all sent out a huge email blast yesterday for John, so hopefully we have a good-sized audience today. But I want to start off today by reading a quick verse out of Proverbs that I think John will appreciate, and I certainly do, because I've seen it so many times in my own life. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 7, "Whoever corrects a mocker invites insult. Whoever rebukes a wicked man incurs abuse. Do not rebuke a mocker, he will hate you. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. Instruct a wise man and he will be wiser still. Teach a righteous man and he will add to his learning." This is one of the reasons that I want to bring John Rappaport on today. He's one of the most up-to-date people that I've ever met as far as having a pulse on the news and what's happening. A couple of years ago, when we had this giant Ebola mess that was going on, one of the only voices of stability on the entire planet was John Rappaport. And last year, I brought him on the Power Hour twice when I was co-hosting for Joyce. And he did a phenomenal job for me, so I wanted to bring him back onto my show now. So I just want to introduce you guys to John Rappaport. He's just an incredible author, lecturer, has a diversity of all different types of topics, and we're going to talk about a bunch of those different ones today. So, John, thank you so much for being on my show today.
Good to be here.
And let's start off with this virus that everybody is saying is doing all of these horrible, horrible things all over the country, this Zika virus. And I want to let you kind of, I'm going to kind of give you the floor and just kind of let you talk about it, because you know so much more about this than I do, that I just wanted you to be the one who breaks the story on the show. You can talk about the five things that's going to happen next, all of these different things. Also, I did talk about the link between these smaller brains and the use of glyphosate that you brought up on your website that I've seen nowhere else yesterday's show. So I want to talk about that. So go ahead, John, you got the floor.
Okay. Well, the breaking news is, and most people and news outlets are behind the curve on this, is that, let me start with this. Reports come out of Brazil recently that there are over 4,000 cases of what's called microcephaly, which means a baby is born with a much smaller head and has brain damage. 4,000 cases, boom, out of nowhere. And then we're also told that the cause of this condition is this Zika virus, which nobody's ever heard of before. And if you go back in the literature, you find it was discovered in 1947. It's been around forever, never caused anything serious, very mild illness, and all of a sudden, it's now being blamed for this. So, the Brazilian researchers, as reported on January 27th by the Associated Press, decided to go back in and check their findings and actually do some work instead of just, you know, going along with the propaganda, which has now exploded all over the world. And what they discovered, as reported by the Associated Press, was they found only 270 cases of microcephaly. And in only 6 of those cases did they find any trace of the Zika virus. Now, just to educate people who might need to be educated, this is absolutely no proof, no evidence of A, an epidemic, and B, that microcephaly is caused by the Zika virus. In order to even begin to say that a virus is causing a disease or a condition, you have to show that in the overwhelming number of cases of whatever the condition is, that virus has got to be present. Otherwise, you're barking up the wrong tree. But this hasn't stopped anybody. The World Health Organization, the CDC, governments all over the world, they're issuing warnings, don't get pregnant for 2 years, you know, stay at home, watch out, we're trying to develop a vaccine, etc., etc., be afraid, all of the usual monumental fear tactics. And I'm just writing a story now, and I'm sure your audience will appreciate this, just to give you an idea of the consequences of a scientific hoax and fraud. There is a group called, I'm going to scroll up and make sure I've got the right name, and this has to do with Central and South America. This group, which is called Women on Waves, is going to be giving women who are pregnant in Central America and South America an option to take a trip on a ship where they will have abortions at sea. Because it might be, it could be, who knows, we're not sure, etc., etc., etc. Because you see, in some of these countries, abortion is either completely outlawed, say as in El Salvador, or severely restricted. And so, to get outside the 3-mile limit, this group is offering to women who are in early pregnancy to come aboard and receive drugs that will abort their babies. Based on zero science.
This is John, this is awful. Awful.
Yeah, hideous. Absolutely grotesque. Right? And this is what I've, you know, put forward many times when these phony epidemics are launched. We have to go back to the beginning. Are there really as many cases as we're being told? Is it really an epidemic? Is the virus that is being blamed for it actually found in 80, 90, 100% of the cases the way it's supposed to be in order to even begin to say that the virus might be causing this condition? Or are we being lied to again? And we're being lied to again. That is what is happening. So there's more to say about this, but there's my opening shot.
Austin, you on with us?
Yes, sir, I'm here. This is pretty crazy stuff.
I know. John, this is my oldest son, Austin. He's my co-host. And I want to introduce these guys. So basically, would you say this is another one of the, this reeks of the globalists again with the eugenicist programs they have, John? It's now they're telling women to get on ships to get abortions in their countries where they can't have abortions for free, giving them drugs to abort the fetus in case it may have this virus, which they have no proof of. They're also, this is the World Health Organization, I'm sure, is approving of all of this. Is this, again, one of the plans of the globalists, John, to try to come in and reduce the population of the planet any way they possibly can?
Yes, is the answer to that question. That's the big answer. And let me expand on this. Let's look at Brazil, which is supposed to be the center of this, quote, epidemic. Brazil has some very serious problems, and these are not recent. This has been going on for a very long time in Brazil. And what I'm talking about is the enormous use of toxic pesticides, especially in areas where people are poor, severely malnourished, starving, out of work, there's no basic sanitation, overcrowding, the water supply is contaminated. And these huge corporate farms, for example, Monsanto growing GMO crops, which require more pesticide. Pesticide is everywhere. And in a population like that, you're talking about death and destruction, no question about it. No question about it. Corporations try to intercede so that nobody can do any good studies on this. So it looks like they're just scattered reports of problems, etc., but they're not scattered.
Well, it all goes back again to the fact that the globalists who run the Monsanto Corporation, who own the, I guess they're the main stockholders, I guess it'll be back to the international banking cartels again, they don't want us to know the truth. That's why they're passing all these anti-GMO initiatives all over the country as far as any kind of disclosure or trying to, or lobbying heavily against them with millions of dollars, trying to prevent the rest of us from knowing. So is it in your opinion that this microencephaly that's being talked about now is not necessarily a problem, but the problem that is there is probably from either pesticide or glyphosate poisoning?
Sure. It could be a problem in Brazil because they haven't really figured out a good system for reporting, because they've got different provinces, different areas with different standards for reporting. But the bottom line is, and I've published reports on studies that have shown this, you take a pesticide like atrazine, it's very toxic, associated with microcephaly, yes, babies born with smaller heads and brain damage, yes. There was a study done on glyphosate, which is the main ingredient in Roundup, Monsanto's number one pesticide in the world. And that study also showed a connection. And there was a big controversy, and I've been contacted about this by, you know, Roundup advocates who were saying that study was flawed, it wasn't very good. There was a controversy between the lead author, who has been censored and subjected to lots of threats, has now passed away, an Argentine researcher named Andre Carrasco. But I believe there is a connection, certainly between Roundup and microcephaly. But you see, all this is covered up, very easily covered up, by diverting people's attention with a cover story saying, if we're looking at microcephaly, we're looking at the Zika virus. That's what it is, folks. We have no control over this. It just appeared out of nowhere. It's suddenly causing all these problems. Don't look anywhere else. You don't have to think about what these pesticides are doing all over the world. It's not an issue. Okay? That's what's going on. And
well,
I want
Jonathan,
to add one more point, which will probably shock a lot of people. In the United States, every year, and this is according not to me, but to conventional medical literature, and you can find it all over the place. How many cases of microcephaly do you think there are in the U.S. every year? Well, I can tell you, 25,000 a year. And now, because researchers in Brazil have confirmed 270 cases of microcephaly, this is now a global epidemic, whereas in the United States, with 25,000 a year, no one raises a peep. And in the same literature, mind you, it is clearly spelled out that this birth defect can result from any insult to the early brain of the fetus. That means the mother falls down the stairs, somebody hits her, she takes a street drug that's toxic, a medical drug that's toxic, a vaccine that's toxic, she's severely malnourished. These and any other possible insults to the early brain of the unborn child can create microcephaly. It doesn't have to be a virus. There's no reason to assume it's a virus. And in the U.S., there are all these cases all the time. So, again, based on this, which is being completely ignored, of course, we have suddenly a global epidemic of Zika virus, and women are being warned not to travel to 22 countries. They're being told not to get pregnant for 2 years. That's what I call depopulation by press conference. And on top of that, we now have abortions at sea. This is a major crime. A major piece of insanity.
My guest today is John Rappaport from NoMoreFakeNews.com. He has a really good newsletter that I get every day. He's a prolific writer. He's right on the pulse of what's happening as far as globally with the globalists. I recommend that you all go to the website, NoMoreFakeNews.com. You sign up for John's emails that he sends out every single day. This is totally free. And he has a bunch of other stuff he can talk to you about on the website when you get there. But, yeah, I highly recommend this because John's at the pinnacle of this. In fact, on the Power Hour, he was the very first person that I brought on the Power Hour twice. I interviewed him twice because the first interview had such incredible response from the audience. So I wanted to bring him on my show this first part of the month, especially now that I've known the Zika virus is going on. Now, one other thing I want to ask you, John. So the globalists are just this set as far as covering up what they've been doing as far as poisoning us with the glyphosate and other chemicals and pesticides and herbicides and you know, this glyphosate, you know, is an herbicide, and then you got the pesticides, and also they're trying to take what in the news, because, you know, you've talked about this so many times, when something big is really happening in the media that they're trying to cover up, they love to use these viruses and these threats of global annihilation through viruses as a cover story to obfuscate what's really happening in the news. Do you think they're trying to cover up what Ted Cruz did in the election? Do you think they're trying to sell a hypnotic reality? Do you think they're trying to not make us think that Donald Trump could dig us out of the ditch? Do you think they're trying to do everything they possibly can to control the narrative on this, John?
Well, sure, they're trying to control the narrative. And as you say, you always have to look and see what else that's very big is happening. And I'll tell you one thing. Within the next few days, nations are going to ratify the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the globalization treaty, trade treaty of the moment. Now, this does not mean yet, excuse me, in the U.S., that it's a slam dunk because the Congress has to ratify it, but it looks like they're on board and they will. So the fact that Obama signs and comes on board is going to be a key event. There was a great deal of publicity about this treaty for a while, negative publicity, and people were waking up, and then it died down. And now we hear nothing about the fact that this treaty is about to be signed by participating nations. And one of the elements of this treaty, which people must be aware of, is that, how can I put this, national courts, court systems, will be in many cases replaced by corporate tribunals to adjudicate controversies. For example, let us suppose that some country decides that they don't want to import GMO food because they know it's dangerous and Roundup is all over it and that's very dangerous. All of a sudden, this could become an issue to be adjudicated by a corporate tribunal, international, made up of mega corporations like Monsanto, who have a vested interest in pushing this forward, and their decision will be final, not subject to appeal. Or suppose that some medical drug, which scientists have been shouting about as very toxic, is going to be exported from one country to another, and that second country doesn't want to accept it. Same thing could happen. They could be forced to accept the drug or forced to accept the GMO crops. This has enormous implications, and it's been swept under the carpet. And now, in the wake of this whole Zika hysteria, the fact that 12 nations, representing about 40% of global GDP, are going to sign on in the next few days. So, yeah, distraction, diversion, it all works.
Well, you know, it's funny that I actually use that term, controlling the narrative. I got that from you a couple of years ago, and I've been using that a lot because once you understand what the mainstream news is and how they're just a bunch of corporate heads that are being paid by the corporations to promote a specific agenda to indoctrinate the people in the United States to believe a certain way in this hypnotic alpha brainwave trance from watching the TV with its flicker rate, you begin to realize very quickly that the truth is not in these guys that are the shirts that are telling us and giving us the evening news every night. And now you've written extensive articles on that. Tell the folks how important it is to how these guys are trained and the colors they use, the symbolism they use, everything about that, John, because I know you're an expert in that field. You're probably the best I've ever read on that. Explain to my listeners why it's so important not to turn that TV set on for the mainstream news.
Okay. We're talking about the network nightly news primarily here. These are the national and global broadcasts, you know, that come out of ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, even Fox. And basically what you see, first of all, you know, you're watching this on television, and that means that the frequency rate of transmission coming into you is going to induce alpha waves in the brain, which mean that you relax, you become receptive, you become passive. And therefore, whatever is coming at you tends to come in without inspection, without thought, without consideration. That's number one. Then if you look at the three big networks and their nightly news broadcasts, you see what I would call an exceptional use of the color blue on the set. Blue here, blue there, blue this. Why? Because it's a soothing color. It's a calming color. It's the kind of color that will make people accept what they're hearing. And then you have the anchors themselves. These are the elite anchors. You know, the Scott Pelley's, used to be the Brian Williams before he got caught lying. And these people are not only trained to be actors, they are actors. And their big paychecks depend upon the fact that they have the kind of voice that rings with a certain kind of authority. They're not biased, oh no, they're not omitting anything important, no, they're giving you exactly, you know, what you need to know. Of course they are. Now, if you would do, as I've done in the past, just list the stories that the network nightly news gives you. Just list the kind of headlines for each story. And now look at them. It's like something you'd find in a surrealist painting. I mean, they don't go together. They're not connected in any way. They're just a kind of ramble, scramble bunch of reports that are really, when you actually look at them, and you're not watching television, a ridiculous assemblage of nonsense. But what the media anchor does, and this is where he gets his paycheck, in the business they call it the segue, or the blend. It's the transition from one story to another. He makes it seem that somehow all of this is of one piece. It's all kind of connected in some way. It's all part of the same narrative. This is the news. This is what's happening in the world, my friends, and I'm giving it to you. This is what you need to know, and by implication, there's very little else you need to know. This is it, you see, and I emphasize this by being able to blend from a story about a gridlock in Congress to a 20-car smash-up in the fog in Pennsylvania, and a woman whose baby seemed to be dead in Ohio but came back to life miraculously, and the weather front that's moving in Florida, and the latest toys for Christmas that are the bestsellers. Mm-hmm. It's all the same thing. It really is. I mean, and you know that because I'm able to do the blends, the segues, the transitions, and you follow me as you're watching television, right?
Well, this, you know, John, you know, you're absolutely right. Now, the one thing that you also talked about in your articles, which is so true, and I've seen it too, literally the same narrative, the same script on the important stories, sometimes the exact same words are read by the anchors on an ongoing basis. Have you seen that also? I know you have.
Of course. And this, I'm glad you brought that up, because, look, we're being told that an insane situation is sane, and I'll explain. Here you have, let's just take the three big networks. Supposedly, these are very inquisitive and meticulous and dogged news people who are digging into stories and coming up with the facts, right? And yet, on every major story, and I mean without exception, they agree. Always. It's the same story. And yes, they use the same words. Now, this people have become used to the point where they just accept it. But it is quite insane when you stop and think about it that supposedly three independent networks would inevitably come to the same conclusions about the same stories. That makes absolutely no sense at all. Zero sense, and yet it happens night after night after night, and people accept it. And I'll mention one more factor, and that is reporters in the field. Now, this is where the networks really thrive, because they have the money to send people to anywhere in the world at the drop of a hat, so that that person can stand up on a rooftop in Chile or on the side of a road in Iraq and report a story. Now, of course, CNN has occasionally been caught putting up sets that look like they have reporters out in the field when they really haven't. But in general, this is what we're talking about. They've got the money to send these people out there. So the television viewer assumes that somehow the guy who's standing up on a rooftop outside the capital city of Afghanistan has actually gone there to do what? To investigate, to find out facts, because that's where he is and that's what he's reporting, right? But as it turns out, that's baloney. It's not the case at all. In over 90%, and I'm being generous, of cases, this field reporter in Afghanistan could be sitting in the men's room in Grand Central Station giving you the same words, and it would be the same story, because he's getting his story from headquarters back in New York. The only reason they're sending him out there is to show him on television, to show that they've got the money and the power to put people in the field, and give you the impression that this actually means something when it means absolutely nothing. But it gives them a leg up.
Now also, John, and you've pointed this out in your stories, and this is the most amazing thing, is that you can go to the same news story in Australia, the same news story in Great Britain, the same news story in Canada, or any English-speaking country that the mainstream media owns, and it's almost the exact same story with the exact same words, with the exact same lines, the exact same narrative.
And this, in part, has to do with the wire services, Associated Press, Reuters, BBC, etc., because they supply a great deal of the news material for outlets all over the world. And they have an agreement whereby the outlets can actually rewrite the stories as long as they keep the central points of information the same. So often it looks like you're getting multiple versions of stories when it's really all coming from the Associated Press or Reuters and so forth and so on.
And you know, John, I've talked to my audience, and you know, the Rothschild banking cartels bought the AP wire long ago, and then they bought Reuters through another corporation, so they control both of those now. And of course, they control the major banks, and they control the major media outlets through their interlocking corporate directorships. And that's why every time we have a show in which we have Reuters or I have AP, sometimes the stories are so fabricated and such lies that every once in a while, just out of fun, I will read you the story they say, then I'll come back in and say, okay, this is what they really mean. This is the narrative, and here comes the truth, because the truth that they're giving you is a lie. How many times has that happened, John, that they just bold-faced, just put something on there they know that's absolutely not right?
Well, I would say that every time where important people have to be protected, you know.
That's right.
That's the rule of thumb. If somebody has to be protected from being arrested and prosecuted for crimes against humanity, which happen every day, then that story will be twisted. And usually the way it's twisted is, rather than tell a bald-faced lie, and of course that happens, and I could point that out, usually it's by omission. Here's the story. Now, of course, what we've omitted are the key facts that you'll never know because we're just not reporting them. So therefore, it's even better than a lie because it's buried under 10 tons of nonsense. So you'll never know what the actual facts are. And I'll give you an example of a recent story where I caught one of these bald-faced errors, lies, whatever you want to call them. The Associated Press was reporting on microcephaly, again, to go back to the Zika virus fraud. They were reporting about microcephaly, and so they decided to ask a doctor from the Centers for Disease Control how many cases of microcephaly in the United States every year, and she immediately piped up 2,500. And then they went on with the story. Of course, that was a complete falsehood. Every year in the U.S., there are 25,000 cases of microcephaly. But if they had included the real number in that particular story, people would have awakened and said suddenly, hold on, just a minute, stop the music. You're saying that we have 270 confirmed cases of microcephaly in Brazil, and on that basis, there's a worldwide hysteria and panic. whereas in the same breath you're saying there are 25,000 cases of microcephaly every year in the U.S., and it doesn't even rate an article on page 13 of the New York Times. Stop the music. What's going on here? This whole thing sounds like a propaganda fraud. But just by chance, by error, by whatever, however, it turned out that the 2,500 number was used in the Associated Press story. And I called the Associated Press, and I was directed to their medical section, whatever, as a reporter, and I left a message, a key message, and I said, look, you made a glaring error in this story. It's not 2,500, it's 25,000. And you should get back to me on this. And that was, what is it now? I'm going to say 48 hours ago, and of course I've heard nothing.
Well, because they can always say they made a mistake, or they transcribed it wrong, or the person read it wrong, so they have a cover story for the spin. Oh, well, everybody makes mistakes. They read it wrong. The doctor who reported this should have known it was $25,000. You know.
Yeah, they can say that, but they haven't even done that. Because now it's gotten to the point where they feel they can just ignore everybody else.
Well, now let me ask you another question about the microcephaly, and I want to change topics a little bit with you. You know, we have this massive amount of heroin coming out of Afghanistan now being run by the CIA. I know you're aware of all that. I mean, how much is this illegal drug use that's happening in the United States attributing and contributing to the 25,000 cases of this that we have with these children who are being born with this condition in the United States every year, John?
Very good point. And nobody knows the answer to that, you see, because nobody's keeping track, nobody cares, nobody wants to know the answer to that. Because imagine this, Ted, what would happen if suddenly this story broke? You know, cocaine, heroin, crack, meth, all play a contributing role in women giving birth to babies. And pictures, very small heads, brain damage. Now, it's one jump away from there to asking the question, where are all these drugs coming from?
That's right.
And who is enabling them to come in? Who's making the lion's share of the money on this? We're not talking about the traffickers. We're talking about the banks where the money is laundered.
That's right.
We're talking about the deal that was cooked up, according to one of the Sinaloa cartel's attorneys in Chicago, where a recent case was tried, that a deal was cooked up between the U.S. government and the Sinaloa cartel that would guarantee them clean traffic routes all the way up from Mexico through to Chicago in exchange for Sinaloa giving the U.S. government actionable intelligence on rival cartels.
Unbelievable.
Hang
on a second, John.
You know, this kind of story begins to come out, all starting from microcephaly, because that's something that mothers, especially, and women can relate to. You're telling me that my baby, who was born with a serious birth defect, I mean, hideous situation to have, you're telling me that my daughter, who is now pregnant, etc., etc., this could happen again, and this is related to these illegal drugs and is related to banks and governments that are making deals with these cartels to bring the drugs into the country and destroy life in America? You don't want that story getting out if you're one of the powers that be.
My guest today, John Rappaport, No More Fake News. I get his email newsletter every single day. I recommend that all of you guys sign up for it, nomorefakenews.com. You know, John, it's interesting. Austin, do you have a question would you like to ask to John?
No, I don't really have any questions right now. I'm just soaking up all this information. This is really interesting.
Well, I told you, John was like one of my best guests I ever had on the Power Hour. I mean, that's why I wanted to bring him on my show, because I wanted to get the big, I want to expose him to our entire database, because, you know, he has so much information that he constantly covers. He what I like about you, John, and what he does to the listening audience right now is he doesn't play any games with anybody. He says, okay, here are the facts. This is what they're doing. This is how they're trying to kill us. This is how they're killing us. And this is why they're making us, making you and me and all of us think that to kill us is the best thing in everybody's best interest, which is pretty much what they're trying to brainwash us into believing. And it's just absolutely crazy. Now, I want to ask you another question too, that you wrote about this here. Just, you said the CDC is the medical CIA. Explain what you mean by that. The Centers for Disease Control is the medical CIA. What did you mean by that, John? Because that was a really good article too.
Sure. Okay. In 1951, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, which is an agency, of course, of the federal government, created something called the Epidemic Intelligence Service. And if that sounds like the CIA, it is, in the medical field. And since then, they have trained several thousand, at least, doctors of various kinds who are sent out into the world, not just in America, but in other countries, I would say at least a couple of hundred times a year, where there is any, quote, sign of some sort of outbreak, okay? And these are the guys who go out, and these are the guys who call the shots, and these are the guys who decide what that outbreak is all about and what it isn't all about and what is the cause, et cetera, et cetera. And graduates of the Epidemic Intelligence Service have gone on to become surgeons general, editors, and reporters for major newspapers in the medical field, professors of medicine at medical schools, executives at health insurance companies, pharmaceutical executives, etc., etc. This is the club. This is the Insiders Club. And they collaborate and cooperate to get their story straight. They are the choke point and the relay point on news about exactly the kind of thing that we're talking about now, Zika, microcephaly, etc., etc. They decide what you know. They decide what you don't know. So, for example, let's say they decide, and this will sound ridiculous, like I'm just making it up out of thin air, but it actually has some factual basis, which goes back to a previous so-called epidemic. Let's suppose that they get word of a hotel in a foreign land where there's an outbreak of some kind of gastrointestinal infection, and they send out a few of these Epidemic Intelligence Service officers, and they discover, lo and behold, that it's a plumbing problem in the hotel. The pipes are broken, and human waste is getting into all the bathrooms. But what they really want is an epidemic. They don't want to call the plumber. They want this to be one of the epicenters of a new epidemic called XYZ. And so they begin to do lab tests and blah, blah, blah. And of course, you know, I don't know, what are there in the world? 100 million different kinds of viruses? You can always find a virus wherever you want to look. And they find one and they say, this is the cause. And we've also found this virus in Japan. And in the North Pole, and in France, and in Spain. Sure you can, because these viruses are already all over the world, and 99% of them do absolutely nothing. But they can put together a tale about an epidemic, and they can launch it from that hotel as the epicenter, and the press will pick up the story, and the governments will pick up the story, and everybody will pick up the story, because the Epidemic Intelligence Service is expert in disinformation. They are part of the CDC. They tell the stories. They control the narrative about disease. And they are the medical CIA.
Well, they could do it another way too, John. Let's say, for instance, they wanted something to spread. Let's say, for instance, they really did, or they probably have already done so, developed an Ebola virus that actually will spread and that doesn't have a cure. They could actually inoculate people all over the world. They could say, no, 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 these people just have the flu. Nothing here to see. There's no Ebola virus here. You're not being told the truth. This is just simply people have the flu. This will be gone in 2 or 3 weeks. It'll run its course. And by the time they really tell the truth of what's happening 2 or 3 weeks later, the entire planet could be completely infected with some type of viral contagion that they personally released. Is that true or not?
Anything is possible, okay, but again, the only problem with that scenario, and we would have to get into a very long conversation about that here, is that what germs will do to people and won't do to people is very unpredictable.
That's
correct. Because different people react differently, and more importantly, the strength of different people's immune systems varies hugely. For example, if you were to go into some place in Uganda, like the capital city, Kampala, where at least as of maybe 15, 20 years ago, the sewage was pumped directly into the water supply without any kind of filtration, and you had all kinds of horrendous poverty and malnutrition and starvation and whatever, any germ that comes down the pipeline there is going to cause massive illness, debilitation, and death. You put that same germ in Beverly Hills, and you're going to get almost nothing happening. So here's what, to just shift a little bit here, because I once wrote an article, How to Stage a Bioterror Event, and I've reprinted it several times, just so people would understand. The best way to do that is to use a chemical, not a germ at all.
Okay.
The germ becomes the cover story. You've got a small town.
Oh, that's right. That's good.
And suddenly, all of a sudden, there's an outbreak, and the epidemic intelligence people go there. The heroic doctors are going into the town and risking their own death. They're getting blood samples and they set up a lab, and they found the germ finally. And you've got on the perimeter all kinds of news networks set up, and the nation is riveted on the story and whatever. And we're getting, you know, human interest stories, and people are dying inside and this and that, and survivors are being led out into, trucks that have a huge amount of biosecurity, et cetera, et cetera, all this kind of stuff. And eventually, after 2 weeks, it's all over.
So basically, like a nerve gas would be a good way to do it. And then you have a cover
kind
story
of
biological.
You know, many chemicals you could use that would be impossible to detect unless you were looking for them on purpose, and you know what the life of that toxic chemical is. You know when it gets absorbed to a great enough degree so that it will not any longer cause harm.
Wow.
That's how long the epidemic
John's lasts. Just talking right now about keeping the immune system strong because there's an all-out assault on the immune system. The show today, and of course if you're listening, you already know this, is brought to you by healthmasters.com. Healthmasters.com is sponsoring the entire show. That's why there's no commercial breaks. So we appreciate your support. We produce some of the highest quality supplements in the world. We ship them globally. So if you're hearing anywhere in the world right now with this show, we can get these products to you. A good immune system protocol is potassium iodide, vitamin D3, K2, vitamin C. All of these are so, so important to keep these in your body on a regular basis because John's exactly right. You have to have a strong immune system because there's an all-out assault right now on the immune systems across the world and globally. Now, John, let me ask you another question to segue into a different story. This whole immigrant problem that we're having going into Europe right now, these millions of people in the pipeline going to Europe, we know that George Soros is funding this. What's the end game on that, John? Why are they doing that?
I'll try to boil it down. Chaos. Conflict, war in the streets, the impossibility in this situation of actually absorbing these people. And the overview is globalism, and I'm talking primarily here, Rockefeller globalism, the idea of putting the entire planet under one management system, period, requires that you erase borders. No more sovereign, independent, separate nations. This has been a very long-term project, aided, by the way, by these globalist trade treaties that we touched on earlier, like the TPP, when you have mega corporations actually running the world, which are very much tied in with the globalists. So you take the map of Europe and you say, look, here's what we want to do. We want to eliminate all traditions, all customs, all kinds of, you know, ethnicity, clusters of traditional people that have lived there. We want to eliminate tradition and we want to erase borders. So that when we look at the new map of Europe, or the new view of Europe, we don't see what we saw before. Now we see a huge, what they used to call melting pot, but it will be an unmelted pot, of all manner of people in conflict. You could say that Europe is now really, population-wise, one country. Therefore, it will become much easier in the long run to incorporate Europe as just simply one region of the globalist framework. We won't have to worry about the pushback from people who have lived for a very long time under a tradition of freedom and free speech and independence and all of that, quote, nonsense, which we are going to eliminate. And so this is the order that you bring in on top of the chaos that you created. And it suits the purposes of the globalists, and that is the long-term objective. That's what they're shooting for, and that is what they are doing. And by and large, the governments of Europe are going along with this. The leaders are going along with it because they are part of the program. They may not really grasp entirely the map of the true program, but they know enough to know what they are supposed to do.
Now, why is Putin kicking so hard against it? Why is the Russia saying no more, no chemtrails, no GMOs, organic food, you guys go away, the West worships Satan, we're not going to have any part of that? I mean, why is Putin saying all these things, John, and no one else seems to be calling him out on this as far as the mainstream media? They kind of ignore everything he says now. What has he done? Is he turned against him, John, or do you have any idea?
Sure. So we have this group of five nations: Russia, China, India, South Africa, and Brazil. Brazil, keep that in mind. These are called the BRIC nations. And they have recently formed an alliance to create their own, let's call it International Monetary Fund, separate from the IMF, that is an incredibly destructive organization. They want to help each other out on certain levels and help out other countries as well. And they've also been talking about a different kind of money relationship, different kind of currency that could conceivably weaken, let's say, you know, the reserve currency, oil currency, which is the dollar. They are planning all kinds of things among them because they see their own future as considerably separate from the globalists. They have not joined that club. In part, yes, you know, I mean, it's very hard not to be part of the club when you have trade relationships like China does. True, but in certain respects, they don't want to be part of that club. And so, therefore, a guy like Putin, he can have a clearer view, clearer eyes about certain very destructive things that are happening in the West because he doesn't consider himself part of that. He can look at GMO crops, for example, and say, what is this all about? Why do we have to genetically engineer these crops? We can see statistics that the yield of these crops is really not greater than normal crops. we can see that they use, the GMO crops use more pesticides and that they're toxic. So why would we want to grow this and why would we want to import it? Let's see. Can we get away with this without doing that, with just shutting the door on that? Turns out, looks like we can. So let's do it. You know, the kind of decision that a president of the United States would never make, because he's already in the pocket of Monsanto and the globalists and the corporations and so forth. And so somebody like Obama comes into office and, you know, the moronic people who thought that he was giving them a nudge and a wink and saying, I'm going to look into this GMO thing, of course they were totally bamboozled, because under Obama, more GMO crops, the new ones, came into the market, into the growing fields, than during the term of any other president. And in addition to that, he appointed very key ex-Monsanto people to government positions of importance vis-a-vis food since he took office. He is in their pocket. That's why he's in office. He is tasked with accomplishing certain things, key things, during his two terms. And one of them is this TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And that's why, about 6 months ago, when a lot of negative publicity began to surface about this treaty, and certain congressmen were saying that they wouldn't vote for it, etc., 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 Obama went into a full-blown panic. And he was on the phone himself personally, and his people were on the phones day and night trying to drive support, making whatever deals politicians make, you know, in order to get the votes, because these globalists don't play around. And when you're put in office to make something really important happen, whether or not the public thinks it's important or anybody else does, when you know what your agenda really is and you can't live up to it, you're in deep, deep trouble. So that's the kind of thing we're looking at, and that's why Putin can take a look at the West and say, hey, we don't need this and we don't need that here. And we can develop in our own way without any of the destructive kinds of things that are, you know, that he's noticed already that he doesn't want in Russia.
Well, let me ask you another question, John, since we're running out of time now. The interesting thing about Donald Trump to me is that, you know, he has a lot of money. He can't be bribed. Everybody already knows he's had multiple marriages. Everybody already knows he committed adultery on his first couple of wives. Everybody's got all that, okay? But he's a great business guy. He's already said that TPP is a bad deal for the United States, along with a lot of other international treaties. Are they going to allow him to become president, or are they going to do like they did in Iowa, and everybody starts doing weird things with counting, and Cruz starts doing weird things with sending out mailers? I mean, are they going to do everything they possibly can to prevent him from getting the GOP nomination? And if he gets the GOP nomination and Hillary gets the Democratic nomination, who's going to win, John? Are they going to give it to Hillary? Because we all know she's a gold globist. She already got $6 million from George Soros last month. She's on Citibank's payroll. I mean, what in the world's going to happen with this election, John? What do you think?
Boy. I don't see it happening myself.
That you don't see Trump winning?
No. That he could make it all the way through, you know. I mean, this guy is a complicated guy, all right? He's talking about one thing one minute, and the next thing he thinks of something else, and he's on to something else, and he's very engaging. And one of the big things that he's done, or two of the big things he's done, number one, he's brought up issues that nobody's supposed to talk about in a presidential campaign, and he's been relentless about it, like building the wall, stopping illegal immigration, and not caring what anybody says in reaction, and doubling down on that every chance he gets. And, you know, there are other issues like that, too.
Like immunization, he's already brought up.
The trade deals, you know, bad deals, we're going to change the deals. You know, this is going directly into the globalist hurricane and saying, whether he knows it or not, whether he understands the big picture, that's what he's doing. He's saying, I'm going to walk into the hurricane and change everything. I'm going to go to China and say, we're not going to have the same trade imbalance with you that we've had in the past. I'm going to Mexico and I'm going to say, you know, you guys are smarter than we are, but not anymore, and we're going to have a new trade relationship with you, and it's not going to be all in your favor, and that's it. You know, he says all these things that politicians are never supposed to say. And so he's opened up the whole game. And number two, he is going up against major, major forces here that are going to do everything they can in their power to take him down and assure that, A, he doesn't get the nomination, and B, if by some chance he does, he will not win the election. So this would involve rigging voting machines. It would involve all kinds of stuff, whatever it would take to keep him from being elected. That would be the objective. These people, the globalists that I'm talking about, they don't care about, you know, political correctness and what he's saying and what other people think of what he's saying and people who are offended and all of that. They don't care at all about that. All they care about is that their agenda is on track. And if this guy really means it, if he's serious about it, if he would follow through, if he would keep talking directly to the American people, even after he's elected president, instead of, you know, disappearing basically and just dealing with Congress and carrying out his agenda, if this really would be what he would be like, then, you know, he would have to be stopped. That's it. So they're going to stop him first if they can with the nomination. If that doesn't work, then they're going to do everything they can to assure that the election, whatever you have to do, whatever you have to rig, goes to Hillary. That will be their, you know, they will put that now at the top of the list of things to do in America.
Wow, so you're basically saying even if Trump gets the nomination, Hillary's going to be president, but chances are they want to put their globalist buddy Ted Cruz or Rubio in as the nomination.
Yeah, Rubio. Rubio's the guy. You know, I mean, he came out of nowhere all of a sudden in Iowa, and now and the thing about Rubio is he actually can get up on a platform in a debate and sort of give the, what shall I call it, the Republican version of Obama. He can talk. You know, he can go, you know, he's got that thing. He can do that. That's their guy. You know, he's made so many compromises now from what he sounded like 3 or 4 or 5 years ago that you know, he's moved over into that camp. He's controllable. He's their boy. And they will try to push him forward and keep pushing him forward. You know, Cruz would be, of course, acceptable to the globalists because Hillary would win, you know, 49.9 states in an election against Cruz.
Well, John, we're out of time. I got my music
okay.
playing right now. That's John, thank you so much. My guest today has been John Rappaport. Make sure you go to his website, nomorefakenews.com. Sign up for his newsletter. It's absolutely free. John, thank you again for being my guest today. Austin, thank you for being the co-host. I appreciate you guys so much. Our website is healthmasters.com. That's healthmasters.com. I really hope you enjoyed the show. I know I certainly did. Give us a call, 1-800-726-1834. Austin, do you have anything you want to say?
That'll be it, man. It's been a very informative show. It's been awesome to be on the show, John.
Thanks and, so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
We appreciate you, John. I'll be sending you an email. God bless you. I appreciate you. Incredible guest. Thanks again, my listeners, and we love you guys. We appreciate you, and we'll be back again with you tomorrow. Thanks. Bye-bye.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're